I don't know. I was thinking about it. I've been to a lot of semis and finals since I came back from the baby. So, yeah, I don't know. I just felt like if I could just get some matches, I could play well here, and I did. So I am.
Serena Williams into the Wimbledon final. Straight set victory yesterday. She'll take on Simona Halep at Wimbledon. And, of course, Serena has had just an amazing career. And it's been marred by some things, certainly. But she is a competitive spirit. She has that competitive spirit. It's something that we try to instill a little bit into our kids when we're coaching, because we've got kids that are great kids. But sometimes that competitive, you know, things kind of go against you. You got to fight through it. And I will say this. Whether you like or dislike Serena Williams, you have to admit she's fought through a lot in her career. I mean, she had the blood clots.
Oh, yeah.
She's now come back from pregnancy. She has 23 Grand Slam singles titles. And if she gets this one coming up tomorrow morning, breakfast at Wimbledon, she would tie Margaret Court for the most Grand Slam tournament wins. She has the open era record right now, but that would be pretty impressive to get to 24. She's 37, so at the age of 37 to win Wimbledon would be quite the feat. I've said all along, for somebody to be dominant and be that good in a sport, that's awesome. At the same time, what does it say about the rest of the field?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think when you go back to Michael Jordan and the Bulls, you know, Jordan was clearly the best player in the league. You had other guys that got MVP, but you knew he was the best player in the league. And the Bulls, you know, were going to find a way, and they did. But there was some really good teams when the Bulls played. It's not like they beat chopped liver. But you sit here and, like, who was the biggest obstacle for Serena Williams? Who was really a rival that really – Martina Navratilova had Chris Evert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Steffi Graf had Monica Seles. And we can go on. But Serena – Pryor's her sister.
Yeah.
And her sister hasn't been that good for a while now. So
yeah, it's fallen out.
Sharapova, that you thought when she beat Serena at Wimbledon that one year when she was like 18 or 19 years of age, and then really ever since then Serena's owned her.
Because it's been like, it was like, you know, Lindsay Davenport was playing well, and then from the U.S., and then Capriati had a good run there.
Yeah, Martina Hingis during some of
that
time.
It was like Serena took over, and then from there it was like there wasn't really anybody that was going to be there and dominant enough to hang with her except her sister.
Yeah. How many Wimbledon titles has she won?
I was trying
to pull that up.
I don't have that right in front of me. But
but she has 23 majors that she's won. And I was going to find out how many Wimbledons she has won, because, of course, she's a really good player on the hard court.
She's got quite a few Wimbledons, too. I know that.
Wimbledon titles. Serena, I'm pulling this up here. She has... I can't find it right off the bat. Sometimes it looks like seven. She has seven? Yep, she has seven. She's going for her eighth Wimbledon title, and she's won on all surfaces too, which also proves how good of a player she is, one of the greatest women's players of all time, if not the greatest. That would be the argument. And I think that would be what somebody would argue against Serena Williams. Well, you didn't have that, you know, imagine how many majors Navratilova or Everett would have won had they not had that rival for all those years.
Yeah, I mean, if they wouldn't have to go against each other, they'd be
right.
They'd be right here.
Right. And
maybe she wouldn't even be able to catch them.
Yes, exactly. But at the same time, what she's overcome, it's pretty impressive. So Serena is going for major number 24 tomorrow morning against Simona Halep. And, of course, she was close in the U.S. Open, and then she self-combusted against Osaka. And so there it is. At the age of 37, she has a chance to win Wimbledon, and that will be certainly a major story in the sports world if she gets it done. And Halep is a pretty heavy underdog on grass against Serena tomorrow. I don't know. You know, Serena's had some times where she has not played well in some of these championships.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't get it done tomorrow. But once I think that, I might as well bet on her to win, because that's how it works.
I'm going to pick her to win tomorrow.
You think she'll win tomorrow? Okay, the men's semifinals are going on now. Djokovic against the Goot. And Djokovic is up 2-1. He just won the third set 6-3. And, of course, the marquee match today in Wimbledon. In the men's semifinals, it's Nadal versus Federer. I hope Federer wins, but I don't know, man. I got this feeling Nadal is going to find a way and get it done. And I don't know. It's going to be a great match. I mean, it's on Federer's surface. It's not on clay. That's Nadal's surface. Yeah. But Nadal's beaten Federer on grass before. And then likewise, Federer has a better record against him on grass, obviously, than clay. But that'll be an interesting match, to say the least, coming up. They're saying 9:50, but It'd probably be later than that because they'd have to wait after the first semifinal. But Djokovic is up 2-1. So it looks like Djokovic versus the winner of Nadal, Federer, and you have the same champions over and over as we always do in these majors in tennis.
Yeah, they're the ones that are going up against each other. So, you know, what if Federer didn't have Nadal? You know,
oh,
you
my
know,
goodness. What if Nadal didn't have Federer?
Nadal and Djokovic, too. You know, it's like there's three of them there that are just kind of trading off right now for the last 4, 5, 6 years. You know, Andy Murray was part of that for a little bit, but not very long. Part of that group that kept making it and winning a lot of matches. He dealt with some injuries, so he's kind of fallen off of that group. But those three have been dominant for quite a while.
Of course, Federer has 20. Nadal has, what, 18 now?
18, yeah.
How many does Djokovic have?
He's lower. I think it's like 8, but
it's still pretty impressive.
He's way younger than those guys, honestly.
Right. Way younger than Federer.
It doesn't feel like that. Like he's way younger, but he is younger than those guys. So it was a little bit later start for him compared to those two.
He used to be 8 major titles. Was amazing. Now it's just like,
and he might have more than that, but for some reason that's what I'm thinking. Like I don't know if he's hit the double digits yet or not, but yeah, I do know that the first two were accurate there. They're definitely at the top of the board right now.
Oh, you're not even close. He has 15.
He's got 15.
15.
Wow. I didn't know he had that.
You really shortchanged him. Yeah, your memory wasn't very good on that one. 8. Yeah, 15. 15.
I don't know. Maybe I was thinking of, like, the last time I looked at all that totals, and it was a long time ago,
so
probably.
Nadal has 18. Federer has 20. Djokovic, 15. I mean, by the end of their careers, Nadal could pass Federer, and then Djokovic pass them both.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because all three of those guys that looked there for a spell earlier in their career, like injuries had caught up to them and they were done. And they just recreate themselves. It's just, those three are just absolutely dominated tennis. As you mentioned, Andy Murray snuck in, got a few.
Yeah.
But those four have been the best players for quite some time, and those three have been good for a decade.
Oh, yeah. It's insane when you look back at
it's time for new blood. Come on, man. Come on, Sam Querrey. Remember James Blake there for a while was going to be the next American hope, and then he just didn't turn out to be that great. Of course, Andy Roddick would have won a few major championships, if not Federer. Yeah. So it just sometimes the era that you're in.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, think about all the great players that played in the Jordan era. I mean, Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, I mean, Charles Barkley, those guys would have won championships if Jordan wasn't playing.
Yeah. And
John Stockton.
Against this group right now, if you don't have everything in your arsenal, you're not going to win.
Yeah,
like Andy Roddick had the power serve and everything. I mean, he had everything. If it wasn't for this group that was so finesse sometimes and had the power if they needed it, and you know, now Roger Federer is basically the finesse guy because he doesn't have the power that he once did, but he's learned how to win in any way. And so now you've got the best American, quote unquote, is John Isner, and all he's got is a big serve, and he can't get over that hump.
I swear, Jonathan
Isner. He's like the ninth-ranked player in the world, and he just can't get over the hump because that's all he does.
Every match I see a score for Jonathan Isner, it's 5 sets. He never wins in straight sets.
He can't break. Teams.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, local sports, got some baseball.
Yes, last night we continued on with the K-18 semifinals, the Twin Lakes League Tournament, where the Blue Red team beat Lucas 12-4, and Wakanda won over Smith Center in a marathon 11-10. So that sets up tonight's matchups, third-place game between Lucas and Smith Center at 6 o'clock, and Beloit Red against Wakanda in the championship. It'll be 30 minutes after that. Also, Pee Wee District Tournament semifinals last night in Beloit and Glen Elder, as District 1 in Beloit, Concordia Chevy Buick won 14-4 over Pike Valley, and the Beloit Crush beat the Beloit Marauders 6-4. Third-place Pike Valley against Beloit Marauders tonight at 6:30, and the championship Concordia Chevy Buick against the Beloit Crush at 8 o'clock. And then District 2 in Glen Elder last night, the Smith Center Chiefs beat Wakanda 8-5. Rock Hills over the Smith Center Warriors 12-5. So third-place game tonight in Glen Elder between Wakanda and the Smith Center Warriors at 6:30. And the Smith Center Chiefs play Rock Hills in the championship approximately 8 o'clock. So top three teams from all those district tournaments make it to the state Pee Wee tournament next week. And then back up to that K-18, all four of those teams in the Twin Lakes League semis have already punched a ticket to the K-18 East region, which will be next week in Concordia.
All right, best of luck to the area teams as they continue to move on with their baseball seasons. Well, the NBA offseason is pretty fun, and we'll get to that in a moment. But let's start with the Royals. Yesterday, this has been weird. We've had some things the last couple months on this show where it's become a running joke that we talk about something or we ask for something or there's no news with a guest, and then as soon as the guest is off our show, all of a sudden the news breaks. It's like, man, got to either expand the show or change the time of the show or have that guest on a day later. It's just amazing. Yesterday, our main contention with the Royals was that if you're going to stink, or as my buddy in Kansas City said, if we're going to suck, let's just suck. I'm like, wow, those are eloquent words. But I get the point. Totally agree. If you're going to be really bad, 30-61, you might as well do it with a whole bunch of younger players or guys that need to prove themselves. And Billy Hamilton's not the future. Lucas Duda's not the future. Martin Maldonado's not the future, although I understand why he's on the team. And we mentioned Chris Owings and others. And so we're sitting here, like, it's not like you can't try to unload Billy Hamilton, or I know why they're holding on to him, maybe to get something in trade. But you easily got options at center field. You got Brett Phillips, and you also got Bubba Starling. And Bubba Starling, a guy that the Royals removed for their 40-man roster last fall, then he re-signed with the Royals. Of course, he was the number 5 overall pick back in the draft in, what was that, 2011?
11, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people said they should take the local kid. Other people said that's a mistake, and you know, so far it's been a mistake. But he's fought back from injury time and time again. Last year, Bubba only played 20 games all season long because of injuries to his oblique. He will turn 27 on August 3rd. Whit Merrifield made his major league debut at the age of 27, and he's turned out to be an all-star. Not saying Bubba's going to be an all-star, but he's an outstanding defensive outfielder. So you've got that. The question has been for him hitting, and he was very, very close to quitting the sport early on in his minor league career when he could not hit the ball to save his life. Mm-hmm. They worked with his vision. I think he had some kind of eye surgery at one point, if I remember correctly. So he's fought back. He's performed at the highest level of his career here in 2019. He's a Triple-A all-star. Hit .310, 7 homers, 38 RBIs at AAA Omaha. He had 9 stolen bases. And Dayton Moore told MLB.com that Starling wasn't coming to Kansas City to sit on the bench. I like to hear that. Dayton Moore said, and I quote, he's coming up here to play on a regular basis. He could obviously play anywhere in outfield. I'm not saying he'll play 10 straight days, but he'll play on a regular basis. It's tough for someone to miss all of the 2018 season as he did, but it was clear he was on a mission this season. We saw it in spring training. He has done very well at Omaha. And, of course, the Royals fan base was pretty excited about Nicky Lopez being called up. I think people are even more excited about Bubba Starling because he's a local kid. And Bubba put on his Instagram, and it was on Facebook, it was really cool, Twitter, a picture of him when he was probably 4 or 5 in a Royals jersey or T-shirt, and he was just at Royals cap. I mean, he's been a Royals fan his whole life, and that's pretty awesome. And now he finally gets a call-up. I mean, this guy's had to fight through adversity. This has kind of been a theme of our show this week, fighting through adversity. Bubba Starling, Whit Merrifield easily could have quit the game. There are a lot of guys that have quit the game that maybe could have turned out to be Whit Merrifield or Bubba Starling, but they gave up or they didn't want to fight through the adversity, or they just thought, you know what, I just better off maybe go make some money somewhere else, not be being paid cheap to bounce around in AA and AAA buses and go around the country. I got a family to support, and I got to just give up my dream. That's not been the case with Whit Merrifield. Thankfully, he stuck it out. The Royals thought so great of Whit Merrifield, they left him exposed in the Real 5 draft, not once, but twice. And nobody picked him up. And then there's Bubba Starling, who anybody could have had him as well. And nobody jumped on him. So Bubba Starling now is up with the Royals. It makes sense. I think the Royals just wanted to see, you know, basically a half of baseball season that Bubba could be consistent. And he has been. I think they also didn't want to ruin his confidence, bringing him up too early, which sounds weird for a guy that's about third 27. I think they want to make sure that they felt more comfortable that he's ready to play. As we just said, Dayton Moore saying he's going to play on a regular basis. He isn't going to come up and play a couple of days and struggle and go to the bench. And when you're 30-61, that's the way to do it. If you're going to struggle, it's just learn at the big league level the best you can, especially for a guy that's at the age of 26, going to be 27. Mm-hmm. A little bit different, guys 20, 21, 22, you can just kill his confidence. That's why I think Ryan O'Hearn, if they can give due to somebody for anything, peanuts, cookies, whatever, then O'Hearn come back up and try to figure it out at the big league level, because there's nobody else ready to play first for the Royals on a regular basis from that standpoint. I mean, you can move guys around. Dozier can play some first, and Witt can play some first here and there, but you like to keep him in the outfield. So it's about time. I'm not going to jump all over Dayton Moore because he hasn't called up Bubba Starling sooner. What I jump on Dayton Moore about, and it's not because I think I can do a better job, because I'm sure I can't, is that I'm not paid to do what he does. He's paid a lot of money to get it right. He's been getting it wrong a lot since the Royals won the World Series in 2015 with the acquisitions he's made, the trades he's made. And then the draft itself, honestly, hasn't been super great. We don't have these superstars or guys that are ready to just take over the league. Bubba Starling was supposed to be one of those guys.
And that was the wrong pick, at least so far, unless he's the late bloomer and turns into an all-star like Whit Merrifield. Some of these college pitchers they drafted last year, Brady Singer's looking really good. He might turn out to be an ace.
Yeah.
The Royals might finally hit on a draft pick. But the Royals haven't done a good job, and that falls on Dayton Moore. And, yes, he has a World Series championship, and he got the Royals the back-to-back World Series. He deserves all the credit in the world for that. But, you know, your job is not to just rest on your laurels. And I know Dayton Moore isn't. He's trying the best he can. But so far, since 2015, he's been wrong in a lot of different areas. So you're hoping that the law of averages bounce back in favor of the Royals and that Dayton Moore hits on some of these draft picks and that the Royals can build a team. But in order to build a team, if you're going to be bad, you might as well find out what you have. But you also have that fine line of not bringing up a guy because you don't want to just kill his confidence. You got to make sure the kid is mentally ready. Because we can sit here and go, wow, this guy's tearing it up in AAA or AA. Well, maybe he's on the fast track to the big leagues. Big league baseball is completely, I mean, it's not completely different, but it's a lot harder than AAA. It's a lot harder than AA. Now, there are some guys that can make the jump from AA or from AAA, can go right through the system. They're those super talented individuals. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. might be that guy that can go AA and just go straight to the Royals. I mean, we saw Carlos Fabelis back in the day, Carlos Beltran. They could skip AAA and just go AA to the Royals. It's like AAA was for all the old veterans, and AA was actually their AAA affiliate. And those guys did okay, but they were also outstanding athletes at the time, and the Royals weren't great at the time either, so they could afford to do that. So it's a matter of Dayton Moore and his staff saying, what guys in our minor league system are, we think, ready to come up here? And the other thing I think Dayton Moore has thought about is, I don't want to bring these guys up unless I know they're going to stick or unless I'm really feeling confident they're going to stay here. And Ryan O'Hearn was one that they obviously thought was going to stay here, has not. You know, even Mike Moustakas went down for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
So did Yordano Ventura. People might forget that. And, of course, they're right back up due to injuries.
Yeah, that's,
But those were guys that they expected to be here. Once they caught them up, they're going to be here the whole time. You hope Nicky Lopez will be that guy. You know, they brought Mondesi, and that was one guy I think they rushed a little bit. They brought Mondesi because they saw so much talent, and they were just drooling over him. But they've had to send him down multiple times, but he's grown up because of it. It's not the end of the world. You come to the big leagues, you fail, and you go down to the minors. You can still make it back up. But I think with a guy that's at the age of 26, about to be 27, this is a decision that you have to be really, really confident in if you're Dayton Moore, that he is ready. And now once we call him up, he ain't going back down. And I don't know if they can send him back down. I think he can opt out, can he?
Well, yeah, because they had what happened. He's not on his original contract anymore, so they had to purchase his contract. So I think if they get rid of him now, it's another DFA. Yeah,
like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, if they try to send him down, he can.
He don't have options because he's not on his on his normal or his first contract.
That's
they signed him to a minor league contract,
right.
But once he purchased that, they're a major league player.
That's why Brett Phillips is still in the minors because even if he had better numbers, he has more options. So, but they've already seen Brett Phillips in Kansas City a little bit last year. They have not seen Bubba Starling at the K.
Yeah.
So Bubba's up, and he's going to play tonight. Sounds like he'll be in the starting lineup. I would guess he'll be in center field. He's a five-tool player. That's how he was drafted. There were concerns about the strength of competition he played against at Gardner-Edgerton, which I think that came to roost.
Oh, yeah.
No question. And he's got – but defensively, he's got all the tools. He's got good speed. And then it's been about the bat. And the bat's come around – and Triple A Omaha, although seven home runs doesn't exactly jump out at me, but we shall see how it works. But I'd rather have Bubba Starling playing every day, even if he hits 185, than watching Billy Hamilton or Lucas Duda, who I know is not an outfielder, or Terrence Gore. By the way, it looks like Terrence Gore is the guy that's going to be DFA'd, and he'll be gone.
Yeah,
they haven't officially announced that, but Gore's basically made it very clear that he either assumes he's going to be the guy gone, which you bring up an outfielder, usually you're going to let go of an outfielder. And Terrence Gore, I never did understand the reason he's on this roster, taking up a roster spot on a team that's 30 games under 500. Never understood it at all. This makes more sense. Have a guy that can play every day and not just a guy that all he can do is run. That works in a playoff roster, but it doesn't work in a big league roster. So.
Yeah.
But it also is an indictment, again, of what they have in the minors.
Yeah, and what they felt comfortable with in the minors to play at this level. So, I think you could have gotten away with not having him taking up a roster spot, whether you needed an outfielder or not. You could have found somebody that could take that spot, probably.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. So
he's
out now, it looks like, and now you move on from it.
Not official, but it looks like that's what they're going to do. The next guy to go will be Lucas Duda, I think, in regards to if they trade him or whatever, or release him, and then make room for O'Hearn. And the Royals and a lot of rebuilding teams like to do this about the All-Star break, or they wait till August. They'll bring up some guys they like, give them a few months in the bigs.
Yeah.
Kind of their taste test, I guess you could call it. Danny Duffy on the hill tonight as the Royals resume play after the All-Star break. They start a series against the Tigers, and the Tigers and Royals are basically the same. They're both really bad. Tigers are 28-57, Royals are 30-61. Danny Duffy on the hill for KC, a record of 3-5 on the year, ERA of 4.28, and Bubba Starling expected to be in the starting lineup. It's only taken him 8 years since he was drafted to make it to the bigs, and that's why you got to be a little bit conservative and guarded when you get all excited about draft picks in baseball. Everybody's said about Bobby Witt Jr. This is a guy that may never make the big leagues. He might make it in a couple years and just blow everybody away. He might be that stud like a Mike Trout. Or he might be a guy like Bubba Starling that just can't adjust. And it's totally different from going to A and double A baseball compared to high school, obviously.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see how he fares. And for the Royals' sake and for the future of the Royals, Bobby Witt Jr. has to be a everyday player on this team the next time they contend.
Oh, without question.
And if he's not, the Royals won't be contending.
Yeah, no, not at all.
I would think.
And I would think he's got to be ready to be up here within 3 years.
I'd say three to four years.
Yeah.
Yep, I would agree with you.
If they want to do what they really want to do.
Yeah. I agree. KU men's basketball, they know who they're going to play in Maui. It's going to be the host Chaminade in the first round of the Maui Invitational, which will take place opening round on November the 25th, Thanksgiving week. Pretty good field of teams. Virginia Tech, Dayton, Georgia, Michigan State's the headliner, along with Kansas, UCLA, BYU also. KU will play the winner of UCLA, BYU, as long as they don't get upset by Chaminade. And then they would, many people think, you know, it could be Michigan State and KU playing in the championship. Is it just me, or is it KU, Michigan State, almost like they're in the same conference? They play each other, it seems, almost every year.
Yeah, Michigan State and Kentucky.
yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it? Of course, you got the SEC Big 12 Challenge, or you've got the Champions Classic, and then they rotate between Duke, Michigan State, Kentucky on the Champions Classic. So Kansas will be a top 10 team more than likely when everything comes out, and that'll be a good test for the Jayhawks early in the season. They'll open up against Chaminade at the Maui Invitational on November the 25th. They'll have other games before that, but that's their first game in the Maui Invitational. What a rough gig going to play in Maui. I'm just so, so, so happy that they didn't take me, and I could stay here. And I'd love to cover KU, K-State, Maui, Bahamas, wherever it may be. I'm willing to fall on that sword for people.
Yeah.
Did it once for the Virgin Islands on Thanksgiving week. Hey, it was all right. It's all right. You get paid to do that? It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I would have done it for not getting paid. I mean, covering my expenses and everything was pretty nice. I got to eat like a king, which was pretty awesome. Not good for the waistline.
Yeah.
But fun. And you have an ocean, and you stay in a really pretty nice resort. You know, I did that with the K-State women. I'm like, now imagine how the K-State men live and the football team when they're at these types of things. Because I think they probably stay in even better places than the women do. And the place we stayed was very nice. And so, yeah. You know, tough gig, but if they call again, I don't care who it is. It could be, I don't like Duke, but if Duke calls, I don't. Oh, I despise Missouri. Missouri calls, I'm there, man.
Yeah.
If they want me to cover the Missouri Tigers women's basketball team or whoever it is, I don't. You put a body of water somewhere and you're going to pay for my expenses and you give me something to call the games, which, you know, is not a lot, but sure beats paying for it.
Yeah.
Now, if they just pay for my wife to go, then we'd have, great, but that part's on me. So, Maui, that'd be pretty cool. I hear Maui's amazing. You've never been to Maui, have you?
I haven't.
I hear it's amazing.
I would like to go someday.
Me too. That would be cool. All right. Maybe Don Hyland can fire up the private jet and take us to his little private cabana that he has down there. He has one, believe it or not. Like, on every single island in the world, he has his own private cabana. Has a masseuse, has a hammock. The guy's just... 2 palm trees he brought in just to hang the hammock. That's how big a deal he is. Okay, the NBA making more news. Boy, if you love drama and you love trades and you love superstars changing teams, then the NBA is your cat's meow. Pretty amazing stuff. It's so funny last night. We've been talking about this, and it's just getting to the point where it's comical, where all these guys get paid a lot of money to be on a radio or TV for ESPN, Fox, and they have all these ins. They have all these sources in the NBA. All they have to cover is the NBA. They're the NBA beat reporters for that network. and they keep getting things wrong. I mean, we see, I'm so mad. They need to start paying me or you to help them with their NBA predictions, apparently. And we don't even need sources. We can figure it out just with common sense and logic, based on the stuff we get, let alone sources that apparently lead people astray. We've already talked about the other things that they've been wrong on, of course, over the years. But recently, they were certainly wrong about Kawhi, and we had that before anybody else did, for the most part, on that, right when the NBA Finals ended. But this one here, you know, Russell Westbrook, I still don't know how he's going to fit in with the Rockets, but I certainly knew the Rockets were a formidable choice because their owner likes to put superstars together. And I also know James Harden and Chris Paul have not been getting along. So why would you say the Rockets couldn't trade for Russell Westbrook? Well, somebody covering NBA for ESPN on their app, it came over, it was a story. And I forgot what time it came over last night. But it was that the Rockets are a long shot to land Russell Westbrook. Less than an hour later, breaking news from the ESPN app, Westbrook traded to the Rockets. Boy, that was a long shot.
Yeah.
I don't know who these people's sources are. I still think these guys are full of baloney. They don't have real sources. As I said before, they do, they need to quit listening to those sources. I think they just say, I got these sources, and they're just making their own prediction just like we are.
Yeah.
That's what I think they're doing. And they got to fill an article on an ESPN website. So let's talk. What should we talk about today? Not much going on. Let's talk about how Russell probably won't go to the Rockets. Just won't make sense. Guess what? He's a Rocket. Happened last night. Here's the deal. Oklahoma City Thunder now have 1,283,000 first-round picks. Okay, I might be exaggerating just a hair. Holy shnikes. The Thunder have agreed to trade Russell Westbrook to the Rockets for Chris Paul. First-round picks in 2024 and 2026. Pick swaps in 2021 and 2025. Westbrook and his agent, they wanted to go to Houston and team up with James Harden. Of course, Harden was a sixth man on that Thunder team that made the NBA Finals when it was Durant and Westbrook, and you had Harden. Of course, Harden killed the Spurs that year. I remember us talking about it at the time, and you were happy when Harden left Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they ran into Bosh, Wade, and the Heat, and LeBron James, and the Thunder just weren't, I think, mature enough to handle that series. I think if that series happened a couple years later, they would have won it. And that was the closest the Thunder got to winning a title with those superstars. And all three have been NBA MVPs, and they're all on the same team, and yet never won a championship at Oklahoma City. And they couldn't afford to keep James Harden. They traded him away, and they all the money that they, you know, they decided to give it to Durant, and then Westbrook eventually. Well, now Westbrook and Harden are reunited. Harden seems to be pretty excited about it. Why wouldn't you? You got along with Russ. You and Paul didn't get along anymore. Paul's an aging player, although still probably a better leader than Russell Westbrook is. Probably a better shooter than Russell Westbrook is, at least on the perimeter. And so Sam Presti worked out the deal. This is amazing. But since draft night, Oklahoma City has acquired 8 first-round picks. And I went and I looked each year. Now through 2026, they have 2 first-round picks every year.
Yeah.
And one year, they have a possibility of a third. That is crazy. But here's the thing. They're not just going to use all those draft picks in that nature. They're going to package some to move up to get a guy they really want in the draft. Or they're going to package guys. Now they got the shy, gorgeous Alexander, who's a very... he's got a lot of potential and talent. He's from Kentucky. He was with the Clippers, and they liked him a lot, but they had to give something to get Paul George in the trade. The Clippers did, so he was part of it. Gallinari's a good player, although he probably won't be there very long, I think. Oklahoma City, maybe a year or two. Steven Adams is a pretty good player. I mean, Oklahoma City can still be decent, but I don't think they're a playoff team right now, even with Chris Paul, and that's assuming Chris Paul is going to play for the Thunder. There's more on that in a moment. But what I like what Sam Presti's doing is I've got a young point guard. Westbrook wants out, or it looks like he wants out. I got my young point guard. I can build around him. I've still got Steven Adams, who's still in his prime. We're going to be okay. We may sneak into the playoffs. We may not. If we don't, we get a lottery pick, so we're fine. And then when we do get the pieces to get good, we can do exactly what the Clippers just did. We load up, and we sell out, and we go get a couple of superstars. I think the Thunder and the Pelicans are going to be the power of the West in about 4 years, maybe 5, because of the moves they've made this year. There is such this what's the word? There's such a, I wouldn't say a demand. There's such a craving. That would be better. There's such a craving by these NBA teams that we have to have a superstar duo or trio to win a championship. And so that's what you've got. You've got the Lakers. The Lakers gave up a ton for Anthony Davis to work with a 34-year-old LeBron James, who if he breaks down this year, that trade is going to blow up in their face.
Oh, yeah.
The Clippers just gave up a ton for Paul George, but in fairness, that allowed them to acquire not one but two superstars. I think the Clippers was a much better deal because it brought in two superstars, and yeah, they gave up more than the Lakers gave up in regards to draft picks, but I think for the Clippers, that one makes a little bit more sense what they gave up. I think the Lakers gave up way too much, and I think the Clippers gave up a lot, but they had so many assets, I think they'll be able to weather the storm, and they don't have a 34-year-old star like LeBron. They've got 29-year-old Paul George and 28-year-old Kawhi Leonard. They should be really good for at least 3 or 4 years.
And role players that were already there helping them get to the playoffs.
Exactly.
And they're in a better situation than the Lakers already before the trades and the free agency even happened.
Lakers acquiring veterans like DeMarcus Cousins and Danny Green. And so they're an older team. And the Clippers are actually still a fairly young team, even with Kawhi and Paul George. So the Clippers make those moves. We saw the Sixers acquire a whole bunch of all-star talent last year, Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris. And now we got Westbrook teamed up with James Harden. You had Chris Paul and Harden, but the sexier duo is Westbrook and Harden. The question, though, Daryl Morey, the owner of the Rockets, had said this offseason that, well, we're the favorites in the West, no doubt. Well, if you were, why'd you make this deal? Because you knew you weren't.
Yeah.
And so that's just a smokescreen. But here's the question. This is the most important question about the Russell Westbrook trade to Houston. First of all, I think Oklahoma City got a heck of a deal. They unload a big-time contract. Yeah, they take on Chris Paul's contract, but they're 1 year less on the deal, and they might be able to turn him and trade him for more assets.
We don't even know if he's going to play for the Thunder or not yet.
Right. Like I said, we got Alexander, a young point guard.
Yeah.
So the question, the number one question, and CBS Sports has these questions here, and I think they're fair questions. So I'm going to ask you, for fun, who won this deal? As of now, who do you think won this deal? And we just talked about the other day, you really can't judge trades and grade them until, you know, these guys are done playing or at least 3, 4, 5 years from now. But right now, what's your hunch? Who do you think won this deal? Who do you think is better off? I mean, short term, the Rockets are probably maybe better off, but long term, and same thing with the Lakers, same thing with the Clippers. But long term, the Pelicans are going to be probably better off than the Thunder. But the question is simply, who won this deal? The Rockets giving up the draft picks and Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook.
If it's tough on this. I saw one person last night. Can I say that both teams lost the trade? Because it's like the Thunder didn't lose because they get the picks. But on the surface, I want to say the Thunder got the better end of the deal.
I agree.
In the long run. Mm-hmm. And especially, I think, if they can keep Chris Paul, mm-hmm. just to give some of those younger guys a little bit of veteran presence for at least a year or so.
Yeah.
I think that helps them because that team wasn't going to go anywhere with Russell Westbrook by himself.
No.
I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. And in the landscape of the Western Conference right now. So I really feel like the Thunder probably in the long term here and on the surface I'd say that they got the better end of the deal because there's probably more questions on there about what's going to happen with Houston. So I'll let you get to the rest of that.
Okay, so I agree with you. I think the Thunder got the better of the deal because here's the wild card to me. They got the first-round picks. They got the pick swaps.
Yeah, that's the thing that helps.
Yeah, that's great. But to me, Chris Paul, if they can spin him for something else, obviously.
Yeah, either way, I think.
Because all the Rockets get out of the deal is Westbrook. That's it.
Yeah, you've got things you can do whether you keep or don't keep Chris Paul for sure.
There's some analytics and some numbers, and I won't try to complicate this because it is somewhat complicated reading through it, but they've broken down the numbers, and this writer on CBS Sports says, shortly after the deal went down, I sent the following text to a Western Conference executive. I feel like the Rockets just traded a bunch of picks to get worse. The executive of that other team texted back, I cannot disagree. Numbers aren't everything, but according to certain numbers they have here at CBSSports.com, that the Rockets' chances to win a championship actually went down slightly by adding Russell Westbrook instead of Chris Paul staying on the team. So the question now is, how does Westbrook help the Rockets? Are the Rockets better with Russell Westbrook instead of Chris Paul? My answer to that is, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
I can do a quick, short answer with based on what that marriage is going to look like between Harden and Westbrook and say no.
Both got to have the ball in their hands. I mean, Westbrook has the ball in his hands even more than Paul.
Oh, yeah.
The advantage is, though, Westbrook's younger. They've played together before, so they can coexist. Takes off some of the share of the load off of Harden a little bit. Although Harden, how's Harden going to deal with it not having the ball in his hands 99.8% of the time like he has the last couple of years? Because he's the one that jacks up all the shots, it seems like. Although he does distribute. But he dribbles. He had, like, by far, what was it, twice as many dribbles as any other player in the NBA?
Yeah.
I mean, what happens when you add in Westbrook? You think Westbrook's going to be the two guard and play off the ball? I don't think so. I don't know how that's going
to
work.
That's the thing that's just standing out to me is, like, how do you make it work with those two styles?
Right.
That are basically the same as far as we need the ball and we're going to make something happen. Or they're two styles, too, that want triple-doubles. You know, yes. They want... I saw the
And they
the
seem
thing,
to care about their stats.
On Twitter last night from Semi-Pro and Jackie Moon and the guy are throwing the ball back and forth because they don't want to shoot. They want an assist.
Right.
And it's like, this is going to be when each one of these guys is going for their first triple-double next year. They're going to be throwing the ball back and forth.
I don't know. These guys like to shoot it. I think they'll just keep shooting it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. What do the Rockets like to do? What's their offense predicated on? It's shooting the three. Chris Paul's a better three-point shooter than Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah.
And in the pick and roll, Chris Paul's much better. So now the next question. Will OKC keep Chris Paul? According to Sam Presti, the GM, he says, yeah, we're going to keep him. I think they're going to keep him for a while, see how it goes. And then near the All-Star break, they might move him if they're struggling, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a pretty good tradable piece, although a lot of money. There's 3 years, $124 million still in his contract, but it's 3 years instead of four. Westbrook has 4 years left on his. Where does this put Houston in the West now that they brought in Westbrook and got rid of Paul? To me, it doesn't change anything. They're one of the top four teams in the West. To me, it's Lakers, Clippers, I don't even know the top four. Lakers,
yeah, I
mean, Clippers.
Yeah, you start talking about it.
Here's how I'd rank them. I'd go Clippers one, and then I would probably go, I don't know, man. I think people keep sleeping on the Nuggets. I would put the Nuggets two, and I'd have the Clippers one. I'd have the Nuggets two. I would have the Jazz and the Lakers 3-4 and Houston 5. You could move the Lakers and the Jazz and Houston around 3, 4, or 5. But I don't think you can just absolutely, positively say the Rockets are one of the top four teams in the West. With this move, are they better than the Clippers? No.
No.
With this move, are they better than the Lakers? I don't think so. With this move, are they better than the Jazz? I'm not sure of that. With this move, are they better than the Nuggets? Well, just because you don't know the Nuggets and who they have on their team, that doesn't mean the Rockets are better just because they have two star players. I look at the duos, okay, the star players, how they work together. And I think of the three duos, the one that's going to work the best together will actually be the Lakers. Because you got Anthony Davis, who doesn't have the ball in his hands all the time. He can play inside. He can step out. He stretches the floor. He's a four or a five. And LeBron has the ball in his hands. I think that duo is going to work better. However, I do think... And Anthony Davis is an outstanding defensive player, too, and LeBron's really good. The Clippers, I think George and Kawhi are similar players in regards to the positions they play, but they are a little bit younger. I know Anthony Davis is still young, but I wonder how they're going to work together because they're not really point guards. You know, LeBron can play the point in L.A. I mean, they can bring the ball up and be fine. And then of all the duos I look at that's happened here this offseason, the Westbrook-Harden one's the one that won't work. I just don't see how it's going to work. But then you know what? Could be wrong. I mean, we didn't think... I know when Paul was traded to the Rockets, we said Paul and Harden together, they all need the ball in their hands. And they were one injury. I mean, if Chris Paul doesn't hurt his hamstring in Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, the Rockets more than likely win that series, and they might have won an NBA title. And it did work. They led the league in wins that year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So it did work. So we can be wrong. We're wrong sometimes. We make fun of ESPN and these guys being wrong. They have a lot more information and sources than us. But same time, you know, it's one of those things where I can't say Westbrook and Harden's not going to work because they played well together in Oklahoma City. But the difference was Harden was not a starter. He wasn't MVP.
No.
He was younger, and he was coming off the bench. Now it's his team, and Russell's joining Harden's team, and he could easily been back-to-back MVP Harden. And could actually had three straight MVPs because Westbrook got it because all the triple-doubles 3 years ago. I don't know. I think Paul and Harden is a better match made in heaven, although apparently not, because they didn't get along late last year. And Westbrook and Harden, I just don't know. I just don't quite see this gelling. But they still have a lot around them. Capella's a really good player. They get to keep Gordon and these other guys. They keep most of the team intact from last year. I guess the ultimate question you have to ask yourself is, who's the better player team-wise to help you win, Westbrook or Paul? Paul's 34, I think, 33, 34. Westbrook's 30. Westbrook plays all out. He can get injured from time to time. Paul, of course, we know has had injury problems in his past. Paul seems to be a better leader, although there's times he grinds on people, apparently. Russell, from what I hear, grinds on people. Russell seems to be more worried about stats than Paul is, which means to me Paul's a better player or leader. Westbrook, Paul defensively, whatever. Paul's a better outside shooter, better pick-and-roll player. I guess that's the question. Who makes your team better, Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul? I don't think there's a clear difference. And since there's not a clear difference, thus, I don't think Houston got a great deal.
Yeah, I think you analyze it and talk about the two players trying to coexist in Harden and Westbrook. So, but for me, when I look at it, it's like let's pretend that everything's going to go fine with them intermixing or whatever, and the way they want to play the game. But let's then also say that they have like a downturn they have a streak where they lose like 6 out of 7 games and they're going the wrong way. What's that chemistry going to be like when that's going on?
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to be like when Russ starts getting questions from the Houston media, which is going to be bigger than Oklahoma City? What's it going to be like when he starts getting those questions next
And he's
question?
Not the anointed son because he was OKC his whole career. When Durant left, everybody just immediately said, okay, we're going to hang on and cling to this guy. Houston, he doesn't have that streak.
No, and so how's that going to work out if things don't go the way they plan on the court? You know, is that going to create more problems within the locker room, within Harden and Westbrook? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm more interested in, too, is we can talk about them having the same styles and maybe it not meshing the right way on the court, but what happens off the court?
What about the locker room?
Yeah, and in the locker room after things start going bad.
Well, and Chris Paul and James Harden, things were going great, and then last year, 2 years ago, they could have easily won it like we talked about, then the Paul injury, that's just a bad break. Last year, they had a golden opportunity. Durant's out. Houston has game 6 at home. They win that to force a game 7 at Oracle at Golden State in Oakland. And Chris Paul was so frustrated with Harden that the relationship went sour because he wanted to win so bad. And plus, Chris Paul's running out of time in regards to his career, that he was very upset. And they both reportedly left the media room and didn't want to talk to the media because they got into it big time because Paul was telling Harden, this is the way we need to do it to win. And Harden said then basically that this is my team.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what do you think happens if the same thing happens here? Harden's going to be like, this, you join me. Okay, this is my, I'm the alpha dog here.
And
that's going to be the interesting thing.
Yeah.
Russell's been the alpha dog the last couple of years. I mean, Paul George has been Robin to the Russell's Batman the last couple of years. And Russell, of course, had to be Robin to Durant, which maybe that will work because Russell's had that experience. Maybe he can slide into that. But he's not going to be the top dog, man. It is James Harden's team, and he's going to have to step in line. And I'm with you. I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, because it can blow up. And, it's always fun to be around your friends as much as you want because it sounds like these guys are friends. Sounds like actually what I've heard is they first played together in L.A. when they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've known each other for a long time. So that's fun and all, but, how many times do you say you don't want to live with your friends? Like, you don't want to, be in an apartment and live together with your friends. Because
kind of like don't want to live too close to your parents. Happens, you love your parents.
Yeah, like something bad happens, and then that strains the relationship for good.
Yeah.
So, it's fun to be with your friends, but you're living with your friend now there in Houston. So what happens when, like you said, Russ wants to take over this team? It's not his team.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take over this apartment. It's not your apartment to take over, buddy.
Right.
It's mine.
Right.
It's like I'm the one that signed the lease on this for the first time. You just came in with me.
Right.
And so that's kind of what it's like. It's like you don't want to. There's some times where it's not always great to be doing everything with your friends and you think you have a good relationship, but like I said, what happens when things turn south and things aren't going the way that you planned? How do you react to that? And so that's the biggest thing for me is because both of these guys, obviously we know Russ has a personality that can blow up at any point in time.
Right.
And, Harden doesn't show it as much, but it's there. He's got that same kind of personality at times that can blow up at any time. And And so, you know, obviously the Rockets fans hope it works out for them. But I'm a little skeptical about how that relationship is going to work.
You know, and Chris Paul, he wasn't like big friends with Harden, but now they do State Farm insurance commercials together.
Yeah,
so they apparently got to be good enough friends to do that stuff. And he went to Houston. But that story I just shared with you is exactly the same thing. Chris Paul wasn't a Rocket. It was Harden. And so I think that's part of Harden. Like, don't tell me what to do in game 6 of the Western Conference semifinals. I know what I'm doing. This is my team. You join my team. And I think the same thing could happen to Russell Westbrook, without a doubt. You know, the problem for OKC is not that they've traded Paul George and Russell Westbrook. The problem is they're in the wrong conference. Because they could easily be a 5 or a 6 seed, I think, in the East. But in the West, holy cow. I mean, you look at the West, it's like all the power's in the West. You know, LeBron should demand to be traded to anybody in the East again. Because LeBron, automatically, the East team would be in there probably like it used to be. Golden State, some people say they're not going to make the playoffs next year. No Klay Thompson. Durant's not on the team. Thompson hurt. Probably won't come back till late in the year. But they picked up D'Angelo Russell. I think Golden State will find a way to get in. So Golden State still got talent. Denver, everybody sleeps on. Portland's got an outstanding backcourt, McCollum and Lillard. And they picked up Hassan Whiteside. So Portland, I think, could be better. People sleep on them. And they were the 2 and the 3 seeds last year. Houston, we just talked about. The Jazz picked up Mike Conley. They got outstanding center in Rudy Gobert. They got Donovan Mitchell, a star in the making. The Jazz are going to be, and they picked up some other free agents that really seem to fit. They're going to be a scary team. The Thunder, we think, is going to fall off, obviously, without George and without Westbrook, but who knows? And then the Spurs are still a decent team, but last year they won 48 games and were the 7th seed. You can't sleep on the Spurs. The Clippers, we know all about them. Now they got Kawhi and Paul George. The Kings were an improved team last year. By the way, Willie Cauley-Stein, remember him?
Yeah.
He was picked up by the Warriors, so I think that was a good move for Golden State. He was with the Kings last year. The Lakers weren't even a playoff team. Now everybody assumes they will. Somebody's got to be bumped out of the playoff race in the West from last year. Well, the Thunder will probably be one of those teams.
Oklahoma City is an easy pick.
But who else, though? Yeah. Because Minnesota, I think, should be better. Memphis, they're rebuilding. The Pelicans should be better. Even though they lost Anthony Davis, I think they got some other pieces around them. I don't know if they're – yeah, I mean, they could be better. With Anthony Davis, they won 33 games. They got Zion. I mean, I don't know. I think the Pelicans will be better. I don't know if they're a playoff team. The Mavericks, if Porzingis comes back and is the player he was with the New York Knicks, and they got Doncic, they've got a couple of stars. And, of course, you can write the Suns off. They already traded Josh Jackson after draft. I don't know what the Suns are doing. But the West is completely loaded. All those teams I just mentioned, with the exception of probably Phoenix and Memphis, are all going to be improved. Against the better teams in the West last year anyway. And the East, you got the Bucks. The Raptors will still be good, by the way, without Kawhi. They'll still be good. The Sixers, Celtics will still probably be good because I think they'll have better chemistry, and they got Kemba Walker and Brad Stevens. I still think he's a really good coach. The Pacers, they got Oladipo back. I mean, they won 48 games. And he missed half the season. He comes back stronger than ever. They got Malcolm Brogdon. The Pacers are a sleeper in the East. The Nets, of course, got Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan, who I think is a declining player. And then you've got Durant, who's not going to play all year. So I don't know about the Nets. I think they'll be 5 or 6 seed, nothing great. And then Orlando and the Pistons, you know, I don't think anybody's going to say they're going to put the world on fire. So, yeah, probably 12 teams in the West are better than the Magic and the Pistons. And those two teams made the playoffs last year in the East. The Bulls aren't any good, although they got some young talent. The Hawks got some young talent, but they're a ways away. The Wizards are a train wreck, paying a ton of money for John Wall and Bradley Beal. The Heat, kind of always around 500. They got Jimmy Butler. The Hornets lost Kemba Walker. That'll hurt them severely. And the Cavs and the Knicks, I have no idea what they're doing. So, I mean, the West has got probably, if you put both conferences together and picked out your 16 playoff teams, I'd be willing to say 11 of the 16 come from the West. And maybe more.
And that's not any different than
it's been
normal,
the last few years.
You know, it's been like that. You know, honestly, it's been like that almost since Jordan retired the second time from the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1999, the West has had a stranglehold as far as the competition level of the league. And yeah, it's insane. If you ask me though right now to pick the 8 teams that would make the playoffs, I'd say the 7 of the same and replace the Thunder with the Lakers right now.
Yeah, right.
You know, like you said, the Pelicans and Mavericks have, I think, potential there,
mm-hmm,
to turn things around and maybe slide into that 8th spot, knock somebody else out of there.
Timberwolves are underachievers.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it seems like every year we
playoffs.
Think they're going to be better, and then they, you know,
yeah, Wiggins and Towns. And
nothing worked. You know, the Jimmy Butler thing blew up, and because you felt like that might help them eventually, but that didn't work out for them. And so yeah, it's you know, there's teams that are on the verge, but I think that there's so much talent in those other teams that we're talking about, so much experience and veteran leadership on a lot of those other teams that you talked about that did make the playoffs. You know, I think the Nuggets are the exception to what we're seeing. But the Nuggets, we don't know about their superstars yet because they're so young. Mm-hmm. You know, we just don't know a lot about them yet. And you're going to start hearing more about them as they keep going.
I think the Nuggets have the best guard-center combination other than maybe LeBron and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And you look at the East, the Bucks won the East, and they've done not much. They lost Malcolm Brogdon, and they got the MVP in Giannis. And yet they're still going to be near the top of the East, and they actually probably got worse in the offseason. And they're in the West, they'd be in big-time trouble. And then Toronto, of course, got worse because they lost Kawhi. The Sixers lost Jimmy Butler, but that might be addition by subtraction. And they lost J.J. Redick, which I think will hurt the Sixers. Celtics lost Kyrie Irving, addition by subtraction, pick up Kemba Walker, but lost Al Horford. So the Celtics, you just can't buy in there.
Sixers get Horford, too.
Right, so. The Sixers got Horford. And then the Pacers, they'll get Oladipo back, and they picked up Brogdon from the Bucks in that trade. And then, of course, we mentioned Kyrie's with Brooklyn now, and DeAndre Jordan, and then Durant eventually. So, you know, it's amazing how many stars have changed teams. I mean, Kemba changed, Kyrie changed. I don't want to say DeAndre Jordan's a star anymore. I mean, but it's just amazing how all these guys are changing teams. Even DeMarcus Cousins, Danny Green going to the Lakers, J.J. Redick, I mentioned. But these superstars, I mean, let's think about it. How many superstars have changed teams this offseason? Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving. I mean, there's six right there without me even having to spend 4 seconds on it. That's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Unprecedented. And there's all this, well, we signed him to a long-term deal. We can relax. We got him for 4 years.
Nope.
All I got to do is demand to be traded and then get out. And I'll tell you this, Sam Presti, I think, did the right thing. He knew, hey, even when they had Paul George for 2 years, they couldn't do anything in the playoffs. I can't do anything with Russell Westbrook. He's 30 years old. Guys usually decline on the north side of 30 in the NBA and really any professional sport, usually, especially NBA. LeBron's kind of an exception to the rule. It's time to move on. I can't build a championship team around Russell within the next 1 or 2 years. And he's interested. He asked for a trade reportedly. Not asked for a trade, but asked about a trade. He didn't demand to be out. But after they lost the first round to Portland, he actually, according to reports, he did talk to upper management about the possibility of being traded. So he was willing to be traded. And once you had that, and then you lose, and then you decide, and I think that might have helped them decide, okay, we will trade Paul George because Russell's maybe not all in. You got to trade him. And to consider what they got for George and Westbrook, they could put themselves on a fast track to get back and be better than they were with George and Westbrook. That's the crazy thing. And you think about the Clippers. I keep coming back to the Clippers. They traded Blake Griffin away. They got rid of Chris Paul. You know, these superstars, Lob City, got rid of DeAndre Jordan. And honestly, they were just about as good last year without any of those guys. They won 48 games. And when they had those guys, they might win 52.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, the Thunder could be very well in a couple years be that exact same team. No Westbrook, no George, no Durant anymore. We got guys you don't really know that well. And they'd be like the Clippers. Win 48 games and then be in position to go get a superstar to get them over the top. So I love what the Thunder have done. And I'm a Thunder fan. But Westbrook wasn't taking this team anywhere by himself.
No.
So once George left, and even if it's George and Westbrook, to me there had to be change, whether it would be the head coach or you had to move one of those guys or you had to bring in another star and not Carmelo Anthony because he's not a star anymore. And they didn't have the cap space to do that anyway. So to me, the Thunder were stuck in neutral. They're stuck as a good team that's going to get a 4 or 5 seed and they're not a serious championship contender. You know what I'm saying? Never felt that with those two together on the same floor. So I'm okay. I might be one of the few Thunder fans out there. I'm okay that they unloaded both. I like Paul George more than Westbrook. That one bothers me more. But once George went, there's no point in keeping Westbrook around, especially if somebody is crazy enough to give you 2 first-round picks and Chris Paul. Hello, where do I sign up?
Yeah. Yeah, and if I'm the Thunder, what I do, and it sounds crazy because we always talk on this show about you don't, I do anyway, that I don't cheer for my team to lose. And I don't want them to lose.
Right.
But don't get too over-aggressive here with those picks if you're the Thunder. The reason
no, you
why,
just sit down with
ride it through next year.
Absolutely.
Because if you have a bad year, then you can trade your good picks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because these picks don't mean anything for trade bait right now with the Rockets.
And now, Clippers, a lot of these could be lower first round picks because they're going to win a lot of games.
Because you feel like they're going to win a lot of games. But if you're bad,
yeah,
then you start losing. You get the higher picks. You still have those picks in the first round that you can use for yourself.
Right.
Trade the 3, 4, 5, however bad you are for the next 2 years.
Right.
Trade whichever pick those are and get a superstar to come in.
Absolutely.
And then you use the rest of those picks to build the rest of your team.
Absolutely.
It sounds crazy because I think people are understanding like, well, those picks aren't going to be that great. Well, that's not what it means.
Yeah.
It means don't just like trade them right now and just go after everything right now. That's why they're late. That's why they're in 2021, 22, right. 25, 26.
A lot can change by that time.
And so now you understand that you have these. And then, you know, let's say the things fall apart for the Rockets or something.
Or LeBron gets hurt for the Lakers. Yeah. Lakers' record isn't good. Don't make the playoffs. You got a higher pick than you thought.
Yeah. So it's the Clips the same way. And it's just like you hold on to those. Don't get too over aggressive here as a Thunder fan and try to push this rebuild too fast is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Make sure that you can get maximum value for the picks that you have and then maximum value for the picks that you're probably going to have because you're not going to be very good.
If you're the Thunder, you don't make a lot of big moves right now. You just wait it out, let these guys get some experience. You got a couple decent players on the team, Adams, Gallinari, and the young Alexander, as I mentioned, and Chris Paul, if he stays on the team. You can be at least decent and still put butts in the seats. And you've got still a star name in Chris Paul. And then at the All-Star break, that might be when you start making your moves. Like, okay, we're out of this thing. And Paul's healthy. Let's trade him. Somebody will take him. And then we're really going to start making some moves to get this young talent, acquire it, or trade up to get a guy we really like, along with our own lottery pick. They could package, they could package 4 first-round picks and move up to the first or second overall pick if they wanted to. I mean, if a team's willing to trade with them.
Yeah.
So they've got all kinds of ammunition now. And they could get even more if they trade Chris Paul. So if I'm a Thunder fan, you got to be excited about the future. It sounds bad to say that because you're like, oh, my God, we lost Westbrook and we lost George. What did they bring to the table? 2 first-round exits together.
Yeah.
2 first-round exits. Since you lost Durant, which wasn't OKC's fault, since Durant left, you've been 3 playoff appearances, first-round and done. 2 of those with George and Westbrook. You weren't going anywhere anyway.
No.
So I love the direction they're going.
Be patient if you're a Thunder fan listening out there.
I love where they're going. I love this. I think it's taking 2 steps back to take 3 steps forward.
Yeah.
I love what they're doing.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.